Return to Camp Blood, episode 36. They're all going to laugh at you. This episode is brought to you by Friday the 13th franchise.com.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend. Now he's coming for me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Warren, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doing it if you stay here.
Never come back again.
You see, Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, E.
What's up, y'all? Yeah, I think this one is fair to call like a subtitle, Jason Takes Vegas.
I like it.
Yeah, E is coming to us from an undisclosed location in Nevada, although you probably could tell what location it was by what he just said. Eric.
What's up, y'all?
And Oz.
What's up?
All right, so we've left Tommy and the Jarvis trilogy behind, and now we're moving into the hotter era with Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood. Part 6 was the film that introduced the supernatural. Well, I guess that depends on where you fall and whether or not Jason actually died as a boy. And this film continues that supernatural thread with a Carrie-esque final girl in Tina. The film came out in 1988 and was written by Daryl Hanny. So we really try to keep things on the positive thus far, but I think
Tina!
I think this film might test how far we actually go with that.
Just a little bit.
So the first thing that really strikes me about this film is the fact that the shepherds live on the lake. This is actually a point of contention I have with most of the other movies, but how is it that no one, until the reboot, seems to know much about Jason? I mean, there's no definite point in the timeline for this particular film, although the Friday the 13th wiki on Wikia places John Shepard's death at the hands of his daughter as having happened after Tommy entombed Jason in the lake. And then 10 years later, when Tina brings Jason back, she still doesn't know who the fuck Jason is. That shit is weird to me.
It's weird to me too, but this
is one of those points where we have to, you know, being that we're doing a horror movie thing, we have to suspend the whole reality thing. I mean, of course, it's nonsense that they wouldn't know or whatever, but just you kind of have to run with it if you're going to watch it.
E, I'm getting fucking tired of you saying that I have to suspend belief because this show is dedicated to fucking making sure they're all tied together nice and neat. Without any of that.
Yeah, but we pointed out several times that there's a lot of leeway where it just doesn't fall in the line as far as the you can't even say that.
An entire camp disappeared.
Well, and that's the thing I was gonna bring up is that I don't think that the shepherds lived at the camp. I took that as to be more of like a vacation spot. Like a weekend type thing, but I was wondering where the camp was too, and if possibly those were put up where the cabins used to be or something. I mean, I was trying to figure that out too.
But they were old ass houses.
That's a horrible vacation spot.
Well, yeah, I think.
I think Tina did say that that was their family's summer home, but I'm with Eric here.
Next door.
I'm with Eric here. Like. When part six came to a close, they were definitely at the fucking camp.
Right. And on that dock, I mean, there were no houses anywhere around that camp. So
maybe one of the cabins got converted into a summer home. I don't know.
I don't know, but that's what I thought was so weird when she ends up bringing him up. It's like, you know, that is not anywhere near that the same. It's not even close. They didn't even try to make it seem like it was in the same spot that part six ended in.
No. But it was. I mean, Jason was in there, and how the hell? I mean, 10 years did not pass in between Tommy and Tina.
No. The 10 years thing was from Tina as a kid until Tina, you know, the movie proper starts.
And why the hell did Tina and Nick not grab Dr. Cruz and make him act like he was alive? I just want to know that.
Like, motherfucker.
Damn it, you took my line.
Yeah, I kept waiting for them two other fuckers to show up, too.
And, I mean, I don't know. It's just, whenever I first watched this as a kid, I mean, I can remember watching it thinking, oh, this is awesome, you know, it was badass. And I just, it's almost a blasphemy in the Friday community, but I mean, this is not my best favorite depiction of the character Jason.
No, I disagree with that, because I think Kane's performance as Jason here is fucking great. He's brutal. He looks great. With the spine showing through his back and shit.
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
Now, I will say at this time, Kane had not developed his heavy breathing of Jason, which
There was a little bit of it in there.
Yeah, there was a little bit.
At the tail end.
Yeah, yeah. But there were definitely points where you expected to see him huffing and puffing, and he ain't doing shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it takes time to build the character, how you portray it. You know, if you're gonna, you know, you might have like a character this long running, and the first time you do it, you don't really, you know, you get to fine tune it over time. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, and I should say for those wondering, like, yeah, he is not in his fucking studio. He's actually outside of a restaurant doing the podcast tonight, which is why you're gonna hear a little bit more background noise than you're used to.
That's how dedicated I am.
Yeah, when I watch this film, I mean, honestly, this is kind of the one that I can at least come up with a few solid points things that I did like about this film, even though I really can't stand it. I think the first thing that came to my mind was the fact that, you know, Walt Gorney did the voiceover at the beginning of it.
That's mad props. That's bad. I love
that. That was great. I mean, granted, it wasn't the full on great montage we got at the beginning of, Final Chapter, but I mean, it was pretty good. It was pretty good.
However, it was nice.
I mean,
what's that you say?
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
I mean, it was great. It was great to hear Crazy Ralph again. You know, even though he's not in the picture, but I mean, there's Jason's look. Yeah, that was another good thing that I thought from this movie. I mean, his look with the bones sticking out and shit. I thought that was pretty cool. Other than that, I mean,
and Jason was a fucking trendsetter in this movie, because you see how he did his fucking pants near the bottom where it meets his shoe. Like, we didn't start doing that until like the 90s and shit.
This is true.
But are you saying he pegged his pants? I didn't notice that.
No, he
grunge,
he cut
man,
him,
so grunge.
He cut them so they would lay over his shoe.
Oh, I gotcha.
Cut without him being boot cut.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I got you.
Which was a comfort thing.
It's a comfort thing.
Yeah.
Which I still do to my pants these days.
But yeah, I mean, other than those few little minor, right. I mean, I really can't, I can't think of much else. The sleeping bag kill was epic. I mean, that was really cool. I loved it. It was original. It was brutal. And other than that, man, it's hard to find anything else really positive about this movie, in my opinion.
Now, see, I disagree with you.
I want to disagree, too.
I mean, because I going into this, I mean, this is not one of the films that gets heavy rotation, when I watch these movies on Friday the 13th. But, and, you know, going into it, after all the shit you guys have been talking about it the past couple weeks, I expected maybe to fall in the same camp as you, or at least close to it. But I gotta say, man, after watching this film, like it is way better than most people give it credit for. I mean, sure, you can knock on the shitty acting and the subpar storyline, but I mean, that kind of thing is a staple in horror movies anyway.
Indeed.
So you don't go into one of these films expecting any of that. And I'm sorry, but what's his name, Nick? The guy that survived to the end, I thought his acting was pretty excellent, actually. He was probably one of the better actors in the film. And even Laura Park Lincoln, man, I mean, she wasn't bad.
But there were scenes too that, I mean, there were some scenes that I thought were, she did all right, but then there were some scenes too that I was just like, oh God, way overacted that. I mean, it was just, I mean, this is really bad. And I mean, I understand what you're saying about cheesy storylines and all that staple with horror, but you know, but it, I don't know, it doesn't have to be, because you know, my favorite, you know, films from this franchise, you know, I mean, a lot of them had some pretty decent acting, and they were like, the story, if you know, didn't go totally oddball like this one did, and you could make sense of it.
Yeah, but I don't feel like it did go oddball. I mean, because like I said in the intro, I mean, part six introduced the supernatural element, which is when Jason fucking came back to life with a lightning bolt. I mean, so. I mean, sure, the whole telekinesis thing was a little hokey, but yeah, I still didn't think it was that bad. Like, I really didn't think it was as bad as you guys are saying it is.
I don't know, man. I think I don't think it was that really that good a movie at all. I mean, it's not terrible. It's not, you know, thankfully it's not like 8 or 9, but
it's not Jason Goes to Hell horrible.
I'll give it
It's not, but it's it don't play right sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I didn't get that vibe watching through it this last time.
Maybe trying to be more analytical of it, maybe kind of notice some more positive points. You know what I mean?
I guess so. Like I said, actually, I didn't even think the story was that bad. I mean, the only problem I really had with the story, it was the sort of lack of continuity. Although, when we see Jason for the first time underwater, he is still wearing Tommy Jarvis's yellow gloves.
And his propeller damage is on the wrong side, too.
Well, that too. But my whole problem with at least Jason's look in this film was the fucking mask and the chevron. It's like, have you not seen any of these fucking movies before? I mean, I understand that the chevrons, you know, sort of got worn off, but you just made the look of the mask totally different. I mean, it doesn't look bad, but it's... That was really the only problem I had as far as Jason's costume. And then the continuity between, you know, he drowned, you know, he got shackled at the camp, and then next thing we know, Tina's fucking house is right in front of him. But that was really the only two issues, major issues I had with the movie, actually.
How about Tina's dad coming up and looking like he just was down there for about 20 minutes?
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I did have a problem with that too. Because I think it was either in a flashback scene or a deleted scene where he looked way more zombie-rific.
Yeah, they ripped that out.
And we're going to talk more about that later in one of the listener mails. So I don't want to get too in depth with like the scenes that didn't make the film. But yeah, those 3 points were really the only major problems I had with it.
No, I did like the throwback to Terry's swim scene. There were a lot of characters. Yes, and I thought
she didn't look as good as Terry.
No,
though.
She did. No, not. She didn't.
No.
Well, she did underwater though, man. That was a. Did you see that? I wonder if that was kind of a nod to Jaws.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that.
That's where I was going with it.
Why not? You know.
No, I mean, because it's pretty much the fucking intro scene to Jaws. When the first kill happens in Jaws.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of shot. Yeah.
So, right up
yeah,
her crotch. There's a couple other real positive things that I can say about that I did like about this. There's an awful lot that I didn't like, but the stunts I thought were really, really, really good. The one where Jason, where he falls through the stairs, I thought that was badass. And then he comes out through the, you know, through the under, I don't know, whatever that's called, under the stair casing when he busts through. That was really cool. And then I think when he jumped through the window, you know, after they,
that was a badass scene there. Here's a fun fact about Kane Hodder, in case you didn't know. When he was first starting out, one of the first people to take him under their wing, do you guys know who it was?
Ted White, wasn't it?
No.
No?
Tom Morga.
Oh, that's right. Tom Morga, sorry.
Yeah.
I knew it was T.
He couldn't even afford to get in the stunt school, but Tom Morga fucking, like, after hours or whatever, showed him, you know, start showing him moves and stuff back when Kane was first starting out. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I definitely did. I mean, there's a few good things to say, but there's just a lot I can't get over with the continuity, and I hate that Kane got some of the shittiest scripts. And that, I mean, that's,
well, he never speaks, so scripts really don't affect Kane very much.
But
oh,
but
yes, they do. Scripts are more than just dialogue.
The writing itself. I was gonna say it's like it's an odd thing. Like with me and you, Creep, we're kind of in agreement that Kane Hodder played the best Jason. But at the same time, I feel like the movies where Kane Hodder played Jason are some of the most poorly done ones. You know, as far as with the movie as a whole. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Yeah, the four movies that Kane was in are some of the weaker ones in the franchise. I'll give you that.
But at the same time, he's able to portray it so well that it, you know, picks it up to an extent. You know what I mean?
I mean, if I don't want to talk about it too much because we're not to that show yet, but that's one thing that pissed me off about Freddy versus Jason. Excuse me, I almost said Jason versus Freddy versus Ash.
Don't spoil anything for me now.
That's kind of what pissed me off that Kane didn't get that role, is because there was a chance right there for him to be Jason and have a script that would actually work and let him not necessarily be immobile. I mean, it's just a lot to chew on there. I mean, there's just a lot to chew on.
Yeah, but I mean, he's zombie Jason at this point, so you can't really expect that he would be portrayed that way.
You know,
like, I don't have a problem with it.
I actually, like the second time watched it, I came up with the thought that, well, maybe Jason, he knows that he's unstoppable and there's nothing that he can do. So, I mean, why hurry to do it? And that's where I kind of arc, because I gotta side with Oz. I'm not a fan of zombie Jason. I to me that's not scary, because it's not practical, you know. I mean, somebody goes nuts, and yes, in the other movies there could be, you know, a thousand different ways to have handled it differently, but I think that Kane portrayed a fucking locomotive moving very slowly.
I mean, the previous Jasons have been described by you as great white sharks, pretty much.
Yeah.
And so describing zombie Jason as sort of like a locomotive, I could get down with that. I could agree with that.
Yeah, the variation between the two is definitely, that's a fair comparison. Yeah.
I mean, you get in their way, they're both going to kill you. Bad. I mean, he sees shit differently than normal people. I mean, he's feral. He was raised feral. That's all he knows. He knows to kill anything that's in his realm.
My rationale is that I think every time he kills somebody, for a brief period of time, he gets a little piece of his heart back, I guess. I mean, his mom, he started killing for his, you know, out of revenge for his mother and how he was treated and all that kind of shit. But he's got a hole in his heart or whatever that can't ever be filled. So he's doing this thing as a temporary, and every victim he has, he thinks it's gonna, you know, he thinks it's, he's doing right. He thinks he's doing something that's gonna, I don't know, make him feel better.
It's what his mom would have wanted.
Right.
And Oz, you have just solidified the idea that we are Friday the 13th fucking nerds.
Yep.
I just want to get that out there right now.
Was that ever in doubt? I mean, that we're talking
definitely no option.
No, but you just solidified it. I don't disagree with you on that. I think that's a good point. With every kill, he's somehow regaining a piece of his mother back.
Yeah.
At least briefly, you know. Briefly.
Yeah.
Or it makes him feel in some way closer to his mother, because his mother's the one who started the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm just spitballing. It's just speculation, but
that's not speculation.
That's how I kind of rationalize it.
I mean,
it is to a certain extent, but I mean, it's it's only slightly speculative. It definitely makes sense.
And we talk to writers and directors of all these films, they'd probably think, God, these fucking guys. I mean, no. I mean, like when we talked to Victor Miller, and I mean, he, you know, Eric's going on and on about, you know, his on the, you know, Excalibur and all that stuff. And he's like, what? No, that was never in my, you know.
He did not deny it. He accredited it to subconscious.
Actually, it was a good point.
Yes, he did.
He acknowledged that there's great similarity there. Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of the you know, producers, directors, whatever, writers of these films would probably think we're just absolutely. I mean, they're thinking, you know, no, we just were trying to think of a way to, you know, slaughter more kids and make money.
maybe we should be
in a fucking conference room with all the trouble they're having with getting the new film made, you know, since we're able to, you know, make sense of shit and put things together when there probably really wasn't as much, you know, logic to it as we like to speculate on.
Take note, Hollywood big pigs.
So going off on a really small tangent here, I wonder, like, you know, we come up with all these theories and stuff like that, but I wonder how much thought beyond, like, maybe what you see in the films, like, how much thought the writers actually put into the film. Like, I would just really like to know.
I'd be willing to bet not nearly the amount we have. I would bet on that.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, I use the particular movie we're talking about as a case in point.
Yeah.
So another thing that I wanted to bring up, you know, there are several dick bags in this film also.
Several.
Yeah.
A female one too.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm not necessarily talking about the females, because there have been a couple what you could consider bitches in these movies.
What other bitches in the previous movie are you talking about? I can't really think of any douchebag females.
Yeah, because she really did a douchebag thing to that. I can't even remember the character's name. That's how much I.
Oh yeah, the sci-fi writer.
Yes, and that was a dickbag thing to do.
Yeah, it was. But my whole point, it was nice to see the ladies giving it back. And I'm thinking of a particular scene where Ben, he asks, you know, hey, where's my coffee? And Kate fired right back, where do you want it?
You know, those two characters were actually, I thought they were highlights. That they were sprinkles of good and a lot of shit. And those two characters, and all the way to their, you know, the party maker eyeball shot in the van, those two characters, I thought that they did really well too. I mean, they were humble, and I mean, you know, I thought that that worked out perfect. I mean, they are what contributed to the stigma that, you know, that black people don't live in horror movies, and that's, you know,
they died,
they did. And but their level of acting, I thought, and their continuity between each other, I thought was a sprinkle of good. I mean, I like them better than I like the rich snotty dude, you know, that ultimately led to having a rich snotty dude in the reboot, which we could have done without.
Oh no, I disagree with that. I think Trent in the reboot was great.
So it looks like we lost E. He's out at a restaurant right now and was trying to get through the show, but it's just too much background noise and his Skype is acting up. I think it's time to get into some listener mail, but before we do, let's hear from another show on the Tangent Bound Network.
I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Blake from the History of Bad Ideas. And we'll get back to your regularly scheduled program here in just a second, geek listeners. But we do a weekly podcast called The History of Bad Ideas.
Yeah, well, we'll discuss things like television or movies or music or games or any other thing that falls into our geek-related podcast knowledge.
You can find us on Geek Life Radio Fridays, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central, or radio-blitz Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Central, or you can listen to us whenever the hell you want on iTunes and Stitcher. Check us out. Roger says goodbye.
Goodbye.
Eric, not of Return to Camp Blood fame, sent us an email a couple days ago. He says, "Hey guys, just came across the blog and podcast and totally dig it. I got a bit of a question for you. Do you think we'll ever find out what happened to Paul Holt from Friday 13th Part 2? Honestly, I'd like to see some closure on it if he'd survived somehow, or if and how he was killed, you know? Just always thought it was interesting having someone attempting to stand toe-to-toe with Jason. Anyways, keep up the awesome work, guys."
What we've pretty much deciphered was that the body count based on Steve Miner being the anchorman in Part 3 and giving the body count, and them not finding Jason's shack, because that would put off there would be more bodies than what they actually counted. So based on that, Paul would have died. Correct, Chris?
Well, I mean, I think either way, the numbers aren't going to add up either way.
Yeah, I think we did agree that the numbers didn't add up either way.
But I think the what's telling is the blurb that they...
The numbers do add up if Paul does not die. I'll just say that.
Oh, well, no shit.
But I think the blurb that you have to remember then is in Part 3, they say that their grisly discovery is only... They fear that it's only the beginning. So that leads me to believe that there's still corpses out there that they have not yet come across. And, you know, I always wondered until I met Amy Steele too, what, you know, the story was with Paul and all that. But she very, very clearly detailed to me what the Part 3 script and how that movie played out and how it started, Paul does in fact die, because at the beginning of Part 3, had she come back and they went in that direction, she would have found his head in her dryer. So that
interesting. Damn.
So that,
all right,
take that for what you will.
Yeah. So Adam Dallas and Mike Z, if you are a Patreon subscriber, Mike Z, I think, was featured on the last Patreon only episode that we did. And I only call him Mike Z because I cannot for the fucking life of me pronounce his last name. Basically, they Z-Man. Wanted to know. Yeah. Basically, they wanted to know if there was any chance of a director's cut. So there isn't actually an official uncut version of this film, which is weird considering the fact that the film's director, John Carl, and I'm sure I'm not saying his last name right, Buckler or Betchler. He was actually a respected makeup artist during the time. There was a lot more gore in the original cut, but the MPAA cut this film to fucking shreds. So much so that there's barely any blood left in the film at all.
Yeah, like, I mean, it almost looks like a cable movie where everything's cut away.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it does.
Now, I don't understand why the film never got the director's cut treatment, because a lot of those scenes still do exist, and you can find them on the DVDs and the Blu-rays. But
I think there's stills that you can find, but I think
there's full uncut scenes.
You can find them on YouTube as well. I watched a few of them while I was prepping for the show tonight.
Yeah, and a few fans have actually stitched them back into the film, making a sort of uncut version. And I think I'll put a link to one such video in the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/36 for you guys to check out. Because I think those scenes add almost like 10 minutes to the total running time of the film.
Yeah, but I do think there might be some that they did find, but it seems like I remember, it's been a little bit since I've seen Crystal Lake Memories, but I think they refer to something about, when they talk about how the MPAA cut it to shreds, that I can't remember what it was, if there was a fire or something, or for some reason a lot of the cut footage was damaged, lost or something, and that's why that there's never been why you don't see a whole lot of it on the, you know, special features for the, you know, numerous box sets that have come out or anything like that. I mean, I'll have to go back and rewatch.
Well, for this particular film, there does seem to be at least some footage left, and like I said, fans have stitched them back into the film, so you can see at least a somewhat uncut version of the film. Michael Talbot and Jason Parker from Friday 13 franchise.com They basically wanted us to compare part 7 to the final chapter. Both have a collaboration of the previous films at the beginning. Both have killings between two houses, and both have a death where a girl's thrown out the window, Tina and Robin. So Jason Parker back in 2011 wrote a post about this, and I think for this answer we should sort of go through it a little, at least a little bit. So the same production company that made the final chapter also made The New Blood, which was Friday 4 Incorporated. So that probably has a lot to do with why you see similar plot points, characters, and shooting locations and shit like that. You also had the prologue, and both movies begin with using a montage of older clips and a voiceover. So there's another thing that's the same. With the final chapter, you got Paul's campfire speech from part 2, and then the New Blood, you know, Crazy Ralph and shit. So there's some similarities there. And the title sequences start the same also, with the hockey mask breaking apart and the title pushing through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The story setup, basically, we all know that most of these movies have the same formula. So there's no surprise there. Both the films share two secluded houses in the woods as well.
Yes, they do.
That's true. That's true.
And they both have epic unmaskings as well.
Although I was not at all crazy about Jason's look as his unmasked look as his face in this film.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It looked over the top and cheesy.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, it was just bad all the way around.
It's because they didn't have the Tom Savini.
Yeah.
So both films also reuse the POV shot, and that is with the tent scene. The outside, when they show the outside of the tent,
it looks like Rob's tent from part 4.
It is Rob's tent.
Okay, because I said that while we were watching it today, and I was like, that is not even the same kind of tent that they showed at the beginning of the shot, because the beginning of the shot is like a square shaped, it wasn't a dome tent. It wasn't a dome tent like Rob's was.
Yeah, that shot they reused a scene, a shot from Rob's tent. So that was, in fact, Rob's tent that you saw at least briefly.
I mean, looking at it from that perspective of literally, you could piece together this entire movie as throwbacks to the other films. I mean,
I don't think the entire movie you could, but I mean, I think there's definitely some points that you could look at and say, oh, that's a nod to this scene in this film. But I mean, there's no other film that, you know, somebody gets a tent spike through the freaking throat, or killed with a, you know, wrapped up in a sleeping bag and, you know, hit into a tree. I mean,
well, or someone with telekinetic powers and
right.
I mean,
yeah, Carrie never did that.
No.
But also, there's also a parallel to the Carrie movie. I mean, even right down to the end where she sets his ass on fire. I mean, I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's really? All we need is, you know, freaking the dude from Last American Hero, you know, getting, you know, knocked out while she's frying his ass.
So another crazy thing about this, when you're talking about the parallels between part 4 and this movie, was that there was actually one scene that was actually filmed in the Jarvis house for the New Blood.
Really? I didn't know that.
I can't remember the character's name, but Jason chokes her. And I think it's the scene where Jason chokes a girl and throws her out the window.
That was the final positive thing I could say about this film.
Yeah, that scene was actually filmed at the Jarvis house.
Oh, how epic. That's nice.
Yeah.
I think the kill was kind of weak, even though we threw her out the window. I mean, I don't know. Was it me, or did anybody else, did that chick remind anybody else of Gina Gershon? I mean, just in the face? I don't know. something about her mouth, and I don't know. She looked like, I don't know. I thought she looked like Gina Gershon.
So, yeah, Mike and Jason, Those are the similarities, and Jason already knows this because he wrote the fucking article that I just referenced.
Thank you.
And that article is titled "Paramount Clones the Final Chapter for the New Blood," and I'll put a link to in the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/36. We also got a new iTunes review.
Jim Elliot review?
No.
Fuck you, Jim Elliot.
Yes, eat a bag of dicks.
They're in the mail.
Nobody would know that because I cut that out. The Patreon people would know that, though.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
B Twisted gave us a 5-star review. He says, "Amazing! What? An entire podcast devoted to Friday the 13th franchise? It's like I've been shoved into a sleeping bag, picked up by Jason, and beat to death on a tree." Which is fucking fitting because of the movie we're talking about right now.
Absolutely.
And like, this review came in like a couple weeks ago, I think. And then he continues, "I've died and gone to podcast heaven. Amazing show." Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Definitely appreciate it.
We definitely yes, do. You are one of the guys, one of the campers out there that we do this for. We just love that you are enjoying it.
That is true. All right, gentlemen, before we close out the show tonight, final thoughts on Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood.
The new dud? I think anybody who's listened to the show in some installments leading up to this episode can probably figure out that this is by far not one of my favorite in the franchise. It was Kane's first, you know, is our introduction to the hotter era, I guess you could call it. Possibly that could be a precursor to a future episode and a few once we get a few more installments done. But I think Kane played a good Jason. I thought Jason's look was good. There's a few little things here and there that I picked up that I liked about the movie. But as a whole, I still think it's a turd. That's just me. I'm a Friday the 13th purist. You know, the first four films are always going to be, you know, the ones that I want to watch over and over again. You know, it's this just isn't one that I would probably watch. You know, if I'm feeling like I want to watch a Friday the 13th movie, Part 7's not going to be one of them. That's just me. Eric,
you know, it does seem in the Friday community that this look of Jason happens to be one of the more popular with a lot of fans. And there's plenty of Facebook pages dedicated strictly to the New Blood. I mean, I can kind of see it, but I mean, because of just the special effects and that go into putting Jason together, and that, and when people cosplay Jason and from the New Blood, I mean, they tend to look really good. And I just, you know, I mean, the end scene, I still can't get over it. I mean, it was a double kill Jason, and I mean, there were sprinkles of really good, but there were definite sprinkles of shit. So I mean, I guess you could say it was cotton candy scented shit. But you know, as a whole, I mean, getting introduced to as Kane, as Jason, and him just warming up, I mean, I would have liked to have seen more blood. There's no doubt. I would have liked to have seen what happened to Bad News Cruz, you know, when he gets the whatever the hell that thing is that he's carrying, buzzsaw to the stomach.
It's an industrial not weed whacker, but it's for small trees is what it is.
Yeah.
It's to clear small brush.
Yes. And small trees. And I mean, and that was really cool. The barn scene where the girl's going underneath back and forth between rooms and him breaking through. I mean, there were legitimately good things I can say about the movie, but I'm with Oz. I'm just not a fan of Zombie Jason, so my opinion is completely biased.
You know, Eric, now that you mention that, that is something else. That is another point that I'll say that I did like about this movie was that scene where she's in the shack or barn or whatever it is. And she didn't just, she wasn't like the stereotypical stupid, you know, dumb person in a horror movie that, you know, should be running out the front door instead of up the stairs. She actually showed some intelligence and was trying to, I mean, even though, Jason eventually did get her. But she did show some wit, and you know that she actually may have, at least temporarily, outsmarted Jason for a minute or two, even though he ended up getting her. And I think that was kind of a welcome change. That was kind of refreshing, that you know it wasn't just body count after body count. I mean, that's what I love about horror. I love when a character, even if they get killed, I mean, die hard, or don't just sit there and let it happen. You know, and she was, doing what she could to try to stay alive, even though it didn't work out. But I think that was another positive point in the movie.
All right. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever the fuck you listen to this show at. If you want to support us financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. Shout out to Matthew Nowick, who is our newest Patreon contributor. You can send your questions and theories to our Facebook page, tweet at campbloodpod, or send an email to feedback@campbloodpodcast.com. You can also text or leave us a voicemail at 757-637-0216. And please consider checking out some of the other shows on the Tangent Bound Network, like the network's flagship show, The Tangent Bound Podcast, The Bloodlust, or Astro Radio Z. You can find these shows and many, many more at tangentboundnetwork.com. A special thanks to the Downriver Rat for our intro and outro music. You can check his stuff out at thedownriverrat.com. Until next time.